On the day we mark the 50th anniversary of the first lunar landings by those intrepid men with the right stuff from Apollo 11, it's time for a weekly review of how market structure has been coping with planet Earth. Welcome to the Exchange Invest Weekly. It's time for Beta 7 with me, Patrick L. Young. Reporting results this week, Interactive Brokers missed their second quarter earning per share by 14 cents. At the same time, we also had news that the Options Clearing Corporation is readying its plan to boost capital, and there were a number of calls for new exchanges, the Nigerian Export Institute amongst them, while meanwhile the Kenyan Broadcasting Corporation brought us confirmation that finally the Kenyan government believe they're going to have their new platform set up by sometime next year. Also reporting results was the Mexican Exchange, BMV, and MCX was the star performer of the week. Their shares rallied no less than 7% on Wednesday morning after they reported better than expected earnings. On the IPO trail, TASE, the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange, confirmed the announcement at the beginning of the week. They are going to offer a 31.7% stake in an IPO, which gives them a 700 million new shekel value, which is just a fraction short of 200 million US dollars for those who prefer their hard currency to be of the US variety. That price is actually coming in something like 40% higher than the price at which the foreign investment funds were investing during the course of last year, earlier in 2018, as you may recall. Some people in Tel Aviv seem sceptical about the success of the actual bourse as a private entity, or at least a public for-profit entity. And meanwhile, over in Cyprus, the Cyprus Stock Exchange was fuming after the government blocked plans for it to run the energy market. That does seem to be quite a shock all the same, even as we got the confirmation of something that was rumoured several weeks back, because Cyprus Stock Exchange has, if anything, been somewhat cosseted by government in the past and protected from competition on its own turf through somewhat extreme gold plating of EU regulations. Meanwhile, we had also confirmation TrueX is going to morph itself into its digital arm, True Digital, which will become a crypto asset-based market. So therefore, the DCM and SEF registrations will be swapping from the world of swaps into the world of crypto assets per se. Equally, the one big sale of the week is the NRB, the Central Bank of Nepal, which owns about 34.6% of the Nepal Stock Exchange, is looking to sell its stake in the company. Elsewhere, the government is seeking to open up investment into the stock exchange in Yangon, and equally we heard that, well, Ho Chi Minh City, they've got an interesting position. They finally managed to get their market cap equaling 57% of GDP in H1. Signs of life in Vietnam. Who would have believed that at the point when the men on the moon were, of course, taking away and deflecting some of the headlines from the tragedy of the Vietnam War 50 years ago? Technology news in the parish during the course of summer was somewhat dominated this week by a rather curious report by, well, some journalists who supposedly specialise in, of all things, fintech. Reuters was dissing the whole concept that blockchain and capital markets really worked. They managed to find 33 projects, they analysed them, and they found that a number of them didn't work. Surely the fail-fast methodology that approaches all startup culture should have been taken into account here. It seemed quite strange. It was a classic second reel excerpt, I suppose, from Blockchain the Movie. All the hype and the energy of the first reel, where money was raised effortlessly, men were real men, women were real women, small furry creatures from Alpha Centauri were all involved on the blockchain. Those people, well, they moved forward, but they didn't manage to move forward as they'd hoped. And as we now reach what is the second reel of Blockchain the Movie, they suddenly find that the vision they had was often incompatible with the reality. So far, so actually absolutely the same as the dot-com bubble here. Now, that's given way to pessimism in places. In other places, it's given way to a great deal of reality, I think. And of course, don't forget that I happen to be the chairman of Blockchain Malta, the industry association of the self-styled blockchain island of Malta, from which wonderful sunny environs I'm coming to you today. Well, you know, the benefits of blockchain are there. They just don't happen to apply to every single possible problem in capital or financial markets. The trouble is, as always, we have a fairly analog mentality in fairly, well, a great many financial institutions. And don't even start talking about the regulatory blob, let alone the politicians who are at best, well, frankly, still in the analog mindset of the Apollo mission of 1969. It was frustrating to see this article trumpeting failure because actually there are successes in development from Nasdaq, Settle and many other vendors where the key advantages were being, well, effectively ignored by this. Look at the multiple opportunities that have already emerged of things like proxy voting. We see that happening in the Middle East. We see that happening in Russia, to name but two very, very diverse markets. And indeed, on the same day that we saw this article being published, there was actually what was led in La Tribune as a digital coup as commercial paper trading headed to the blockchain. A fabulous success in the French marketplace, with, of course, settlement from, indeed, Settle, who I mentioned earlier on. And bravo to those gentlemen. There was a great use case which was completely ignored in this article. You know, there were the same stories about the failure of the internet when the original World Wide Web was spluttering to succeed and actually a victim of its own success because there was insufficient bandwidth to go round. Such linearists as Mike Bloomberg, long before he even became Mayor Mike, garnered, well, fleeting headlines with things like, well, the phrase "the internet sucks" springs to mind in the relation to Mayor Bloomberg as he later became. It's part of the same short-termist phenomenon, which clickbait is basically valued higher than perspective. Frankly, one would have expected better of Reuters, given the fact that it is an august and sensible news organisation in the main. But it's summer, headlines must be found, clickbait must be gained, and therefore I suppose this was truly a clickbait headline. In essence, you know, part of the problem remains that DLT blockchain was seen as a panacea for everything, when in reality it is a delightful database system which offers advantages under certain circumstances. A key point which actually the breathless media themselves entirely missed on the first series of stories. Perhaps the reason for this downbeat article was driven by, well, many people missing the point the first time round amongst the media, and indeed the politicians, and indeed the banks, of course, themselves. Certainly, this brazenly misses the point in terms of where we're going with blockchain and our interesting DLT future. Therefore, I suppose the one thing we could say is, in an age of cryptocurrency where it threatens the exorbitant privilege of the US dollar, and look at the hysteria that has surrounded none other than the two-bit rather dodgy proposition which is Libra, ill-conceived as it may be using mostly legacy technology. But at the same time, we must be careful of the exorbitant privilege of a legacy news media, because it can have its downsides. And this was certainly one case where they've completely failed to understand just where we are in the cycle towards the future. Someone who doesn't misunderstand that is actually the Stock Exchange of Thailand. They've unveiled a very interesting digital gateway. They're going to be able to access the National Digital ID platform. Wonderful, bravo, fabulous, and really good for AML and KYC. A fascinating service which again belies this dubious notion that cryptocurrency is an open bandit technology. And indeed, that territory was also discussed widely with an excellent profile this week about Chain Analysis, the startup which effectively became one of the most successful and useful tools there is out there because it can tell you everywhere your Bitcoin's been. Try doing that with a $50 bill, despite the fact that it ends up with traces of cocaine. Elsewhere in the vendor world, Nasdaq and the Iraqi Stock Exchange have signed a new market technology agreement. And fascinatingly, Japan is rumoured to be leading development of something they call the SWIFT network for cryptocurrency. The only thing one can hope is that the SWIFT network for cryptocurrency is in fact nothing like, well, SWIFT. Finally, this week in technology, the Botswana Stock Exchange is replacing the London Stock Exchange Group's settlement system with, quite interesting, the CMA Small Systems process, which comes from a Russo-Swedish house, which are to now, well, much more successful at selling into central banks rather than CSDs per se, but they're certainly coming up on the rails, which makes for an interesting week in technology. One good place to look in the Reuters news agency this week was Breaking Views, their subsidiary. They had a very interesting piece discussing, well, who made what money out of TradeWeb, and indeed the treasure hunt in trying to discern who made which money where. They were discussing the fact that the IPO of the $11 billion trading tech firm created small windfalls for backers, including a multiplicity of investment banks. However, each of them reported the sums differently and with mixed levels of clarity. Fascinating altogether for accounting sleuths who are interested in trying to break down what are actually the levels of profitability in different banks. It makes for very, very interesting reading. The numbers, the scores on the doors ultimately are that Morgan Stanley seemed to have disclosed $176 million. JP Morgan didn't disclose the amount at all. Bank of America disclosed $200 million. Citigroup, $355 million. Goldman Sachs, $375 million. And other investors include Barclays, Deutsche Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, UBS and Credit Suisse. I suppose the place where the money will be most welcome is, of course, in Deutsche Bank, who announced those swingeing cuts last week as they effectively exit de facto the investment banking worldwide ambitions that they once held. After a multitude of "The Star is Born?" question mark headlines, various photo lineups with Chinese dignitaries who were again in evidence during the course of the last week in Shanghai, we have managed something that I think is possibly truly exceptional. The Star Market, or as they call it, the Chinese equivalent to Nasdaq, hasn't even actually launched its secondary trading yet. That's coming this week. Yet already, the Shanghai police have managed to detain a well-known TV host, Liao Yingquang, and a series of other employees of a TV show who are accused of providing insider information to small investors ahead of the trading debut of the whole platform itself. Well, bravo for China. At least they're cracking down, even if they've managed to crack down, well, without the marketplace even being fully launched. How incredible. In People News this week, congratulations to Milena Vucinic. She has become the new CEO of Montenegro's stock exchange, succeeding acting CEO Mirko Marković, who's been in situ since the start of the year, following the departure last year of the CEO Gojko Maksimović. Meanwhile, of course, the big news of the week was the arrival of Heath Tarbert, assuming office as the 14th chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation of the USA. He arrived in office wishing all the best to the retiring chairman, the excellent Christopher Giancarlo, and thereafter set up a series of appointments of his different executive team, who will hopefully steer the CFTC forward until, well, the next presidential election, which is due during the course of the end of next year. Meanwhile, elsewhere, the first MEP, member of the European Parliament, who comes directly from the parish, Jake Pugh, an extremely experienced trader, one of the people who was on the life floor on the very first day of its operations, subsequently a local, a hedge fund manager, and also a very, very experienced consultant in all sorts of matters to do with market structure and particularly regulation. He made an elegant maiden speech in Strasbourg in the Europarliament, where they were actually debating the conclusion of the Romanian presidency. For those of you who don't understand the number of presidencies in the European Union, I sympathise. However, there are a couple of presidents at the top, the European Commission and the European something or other else. Then, at the same time, each nation has, in rotation, a presidency. So, therefore, the Romanians took place for the course of the last 6 months. It's worth a listen if you can catch up with it on YouTube or one of those other sources to hear the economic statistics which portray a depressing picture of the abandonment of European youth at the altar of the integration project. His maiden speech is very, very entertaining and interesting, and indeed he makes a very, very valid plaudit for the inspirational power of Europe and Romania's own Simona Halep, who won the Wimbledon Women's Tennis Championship at the weekend. Perhaps most excitingly, albeit his career may be stunted by Brexit itself, Jake has joined the Econ Committee, that's the committee which actually controls financial regulation, making terrific news for the parish for no matter how many weeks he's there, because he brings a truly expert qualification from capital markets, which is, well, to put it mildly, lacking in many other members of the body. And I speak as someone who's actually given testimony to the Econ Committee in the past. Over at the London Stock Exchange Group, they've added to the board Dominic Blakemore, the CFO of a massive catering group, Compass, is joining as a non-executive director, effective the 1st of January 2020. He will also become the chairman of the Audit Committee, assuming office from Paul Hayden after the conclusion of the AGM in April 2020, when Mr. Hayden is stepping down from the LSE board. Elsewhere, Lisa Rabb, very experienced for a long time with Goldman Sachs, particularly in Europe, has been named the Chief Government and Public Affairs Officer for Moody's, the rating agency. Meanwhile, John Corzine, well, he's accepted a prop trading ban in his attempt at a Wall Street resurrection. Frankly, I think he's lucky to manage to get a resurrection after the damage he did to MF Global when he effectively tried to replicate what Goldman Sachs's prop department did without anything like the balance sheet of Goldman Sachs, taking MF Global and a great deal of client money with it. In product news, the Dhaka Bourse is developing tradable capital market indices. They're going to be using their nous of their strategic partners, the Shanghai and Shenzhen bourses, who invested in the exchange during the course of the last year to provide technical support. Over in Australia, the ASX is preparing for the very, very interesting situation where they're likely to see negative interest rate trading in Australian dollar instruments in the near future. Meanwhile, regulators stepped up their calls for an urgent move away from LIBOR. They're looking for low latency moves across the board, and there's certainly a great degree of joined up transatlantic thinking in terms of pushing people out of the LIBOR curve. I have to say, it does all look rather like panic stations, and I'm not particularly sure that the solutions that we're looking at are actually the best answer that we could ever happen. I think the hurry is unbecoming of mature regulation at the moment, even though there are foibles to LIBOR. Over in Saudi Arabia, interesting news, the regulators and the government are studying a law to license other stock exchange operators. Could that be that we're about to see a totality of cosmopolitanism similar to what we see in the Emirates with multiple exchanges in operation? Equally, is it probably presaging some form of stake sale, privatisation or indeed IPO of the domestic monopolist Tadawul itself? Time will tell. Elsewhere, a little bit of a spat. IOSCO and the Bank of England fell out. We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about this Neil Woodford fiasco, a man whose fund management empire has effectively crumbled or been self-immolated on the basis of offering, well, a typical fund where you were allowed to redeem, but atypically he had a great deal of illiquid investment which didn't allow for easy selling, thus ultimately taking the fund more or less apart, limb from limb. Bank of England's been criticising the fact that these sorts of opportunities for calls for money and from investors in illiquid funds are effectively an oxymoron. IOSCO got quite shirty. They didn't think so at all. And thus, ladies and gentlemen, we reach the end of this week's brief odyssey through the parish of exchanges and markets. If this hasn't been enough for you, don't forget, the totality of news is covered in Exchange Invest Daily, my newsletter. It comes out Monday through Friday. And you can subscribe for $200 per user per year. Email me, patrick@derivativesvision.com for more details, or go to our website, exchangeinvest.com. If you're looking for something else to read, don't forget DLT Malta, Thoughts from the Blockchain Island, the book I've just edited, which was published recently, the first book from any nation discussing its national blockchain strategy with the leading thinkers in the field, available at all good bookshops everywhere, published by DV Books. But away from DLT Malta, think about where three men were this time 50 years ago, several hundred thousand kilometres from Earth. It had taken them multiple days at speeds of Mach 2.7 through 3.4 to arrive in lunar orbit. By the end of this day 50 years ago, the first two men had walked on the moon. Saluting that achievement, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Patrick Young. I wish you all a very, very successful day. And if you think you can't do it, just remember, if NASA could put three men on the moon with, what, 10% of the power of your mobile phone, then you can do it. Have a great week in markets.